Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now, imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
On DAB+, online, via the TalkSport app, and on your smart speaker.
The Women's Football Show.
With Leanne Sanderson.
Absolutely first class.
On TalkSport 2.
Hello, hello, this is TalkSport Women's Football Show. Don't forget you can listen back to the full Women's Football Show via the TalkSport app. This week, we're on Monday at 7pm. So swipe for TalkSport 2, find Monday, and you can listen full from there. This week, I was joined by Tottenham and Jamaica goalkeeper Rebecca Spencer, and we discussed how she's finding the season so far. How are you doing, my friend?
Yeah, no, I'm really well. Really, really good, thank you. I'm very rejuvenated after my little trip to Portugal.
I saw you last Saturday when we got honoured at the Emirates, because obviously we'll talk more about that, but we were at Arsenal together. And then the next thing, you messaged me saying to me you're going to Porto, like, literally that same night.
Yeah, it was a spontaneous one. Just wanted to get a different change of scenery, different environment, and yeah, I'm back already, so it was great.
And happy belated birthday, by the way.
Thank you.
You had a birthday the other day. And, you know, what do you like to do in your downtime, though? Because I know for me, like, I love travelling.
Yeah.
So is travelling something that you like to do when you're not playing to switch off?
I think as I've got older, I definitely appreciate it a lot more, just seeing different cultures and just being around different people. And, you know, I kind of like doing stuff on my own quite a lot. But in my downtime, like, I'm a massive family person. I've got a huge family, so I love to spend as much time.
How many nieces and nephews you got?
So I've got 9.
I just want everyone to know that. I know your family's a big family. I've known your mum and dad for years.
Yeah.
So we obviously grew up together at Arsenal. You know, I've known you for 20 plus years, although we still both look about 21. I'll speak for myself. Talk to me a little bit about how it felt for you growing up at Arsenal. You know, you're in the first team. Emma Byrne was the number one goalkeeper. You're an understudy. Like, how impactful has she been on your career and just growing up at Arsenal?
Yeah, obviously it's an amazing club. And it obviously felt like home right from the start. And obviously when you go through the academy and you go through all the different age groups, you kind of think that's your home. So obviously going into then the first team at such a young age, it was just like, it's an eye-opener. It definitely humbles you anyways as a kid. You think, okay, I need to kind of grow up a little bit, you know, quicker than, you know, most kids probably would. But something that I appreciated, you know, by all the players that were there was that they all treated me like an adult straight away. There was no difference in how they treated me. And I think that also helped with my growth in the future.
So obviously you've had 3 different spells at Arsenal, and now, you know, you're at Tottenham Hotspur. You've been there now 4 or 5 seasons, right?
Yeah.
I mean, talk to me a little bit about that. You know, most people when they move to a rivalry club, I know it's not the same in the women's game, but you've been at the club. How good is it for you to have some stability to be at a club for a long time?
Yeah, it's all I ever wanted. And, you know, like we spoke about Arsenal, like, I felt like that was my home, and I almost feel like I've been through 2 different careers. You know, going into senior football at the age of 14 and then trying to transition into playing full-time football is really difficult. And once I'd left Arsenal, I knew that I needed to play. So just trying to find the right team was really difficult. And I'd been at some amazing clubs, but definitely Spurs has been a club for me that has kind of been somewhere where I could settle. I've been there for 5 years and I've been on like a mini journey with the club from where it was to where it is now. So, you know, we've been getting better each season.
Yeah, I agree with that. I also want to talk a little bit about being a goalkeeper, right? Because when you're like not number one, I always think about the mental side of being a second or third choice goalkeeper. Because as an outfield player, if I'm on the bench, there's a good chance as a centre forward, I might come in the 60th minute, you know, or the 80th minute or something like that.
Yeah.
So how do you mentally prepare as a goalkeeper when you are not, you know, the everyday training, the goalkeeper union, the dynamic? Like, talk to me a little bit about that, because I think I'd really struggle.
Yeah.
I'm not going to lie. If I wasn't number one, I'd still feel like I'd be a good teammate. But every single day having to be the understudy or the second or the third, how have you, like, mentally, you know, done that?
I think obviously growing up at Arsenal and doing that there for such a long time, obviously I was very young, so I knew that I wasn't ready to play. But I kind of grew into that role of knowing what it took to do that. So obviously you have to have a lot of, you know, resilience to be in that role. And then you also have to be prepared if you do get called upon. And I think that's probably one of the hardest parts of it is, as a goalkeeper, I think it's the hardest position to come on in because you don't feel ready. So whenever there's a game, I'm like, sometimes I literally would sit there if I wasn't playing, I'd be like, this game wouldn't, if I had to come on in here, I don't know if I'd feel very confident going in that game. So I feel like, you know, if people have got that mindset where they can be ready and switched on the whole way through, like, you know, sitting there from 1 to 90, you never know, you could go on the 96th minute, anything. You've just got to be prepared for any moment. And we've got to be, like, really warm and you've got to be, you know, ready to go. And I find that really, that's probably one of the hardest parts of it. But the, like I said, like, the mindset of being a goalkeeper and not knowing whether you're going to play or not is very difficult. Like you said, you're not going to get a chance to go on unless there's an injury. So it is hard, but I think it takes a special breed of person to be able to do it.
Yeah, I agree with that, and fair play to you. Now, I want to talk to you about a trend that you guys set at the Reggae Girls. You know, a lot of talk has been about players have played for, say, England, younger national teams, and then made that decision yourself, Ian Sampson, Drew Spence, Jay Bailey. And now we're starting to see more players do it. Now, you played in England under 20s, you know. What, talk to me about how that came about, playing for the Reggae Girls, and, you know, we'll talk about the World Cup in a minute, but how did that come about, you kind of making that transition to play for Jamaica?
Yeah, well, after I got called up to the England Seniors, and I was kind of in and out of that squad for a little while, and I picked up an injury, and kind of after that I knew that was it. I knew I wasn't going to get back in. My form had dipped quite a lot and I was up in the air with which club I was going to be at, and, you know, I kind of had like a respite from international football and I didn't, you know, get selected. So in I think it was 2019 when it was the, I think it was the World Cup, I've forgotten what it was now. In France?
In France. Euros?
No, it was the World Cup. I'm pretty sure it was in France.
Okay. Yeah, it was the World Cup.
Yeah, and Jamaica went to that one and I had got contacted about that World Cup, but I couldn't get my paperwork sorted. But I think it was probably the right thing that I didn't go because I wouldn't have been ready, if that made sense. So it's just like a long process of getting everything sorted. And obviously my dad's Jamaican, so, you know, I qualify to be able to play for them because I didn't know about Jamaica women's football growing up. And I don't think many people did.
No.
So we didn't know that we had that other side that we could go and explore. So I think, you know, I've left it quite late, but I'm really, really happy that I've taken the opportunity to do it now.
Yeah, and I want to talk to you about that positive experience at the World Cup, but I want to hear about, you know, you guys went to the World Cup and not really knowing if you were going to get paid. So talk to me a little bit about that. And I think sometimes these type of adverse situations can sometimes bring you more together as a group, because we've played for the love of the game for years, Bex.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, we played in the game. You've been through the good, the bad and the ugly, as have I,
yeah,
financially and all those types of things. So how was that preparing for a tournament, you know, not knowing if you're really going to get paid?
Yeah, with us, you know, it's not always about money, but, you know, we know we're underfunded anyways. We know we don't have a lot of resources and we have to try and make do with what we've got. And I think we've done that for a number of years. But then it got to a point where we're going to the World Cup and we were unsure how we were actually getting there. We didn't know about flights. We had a camp in Amsterdam just beforehand, which was great, which Sadella Mali put on for us, which we had a fantastic experience out there and it was good prep. And then when it came to actually us going to Australia, we didn't know how that looked. So everyone was on different flights. So you can imagine as a group, as a team, you've got, say, for example, me and Bunny Shaw on a separate flight from everyone else. Everyone else has already got there. But then you've got, like, certain players that haven't arrived yet. So for our preparation, obviously, it doesn't help. But then at the same time, I think we had, like, something installed in us throughout all the preparation camps where we just said, look, girls, we've seen our group now and we're going to get out the group. And that was something that we kept saying. And I kept saying it. And everyone looked at me, like, as if, do you know what, she means it. And I'm like, I mean it, girls. We're going to get out of this group. And then after that, we'll see what happens. But let's just make sure we get out of the group. And we did just that. So it was perfect.
And you had a strong support back here in England. I mean, my dad's Jamaican as well. So, yeah, you know, I was rooting for the Reggae Girls. And I think, you know, the fact that you guys went there, talk to me about your experience there. I mean, Brazil, France, you drew. You just got beat by Colombia. But how amazing was that overall experience for you being there?
Yeah, it was amazing. I think it was probably up there with one of the best things that I've ever experienced with the group of players. And, you know, just with how we kind of conducted ourselves and carried ourselves. I was just so proud of each and every person. Because like you said, you know, we don't have everything and you're playing against teams that have it all. You're playing against top 10 teams and, you know, we're the underdogs throughout. And I think we could thrive off the fact that we was underdogs and make the most of it. So the experience was incredible. And coming home was really, really hard from that tournament. I just remember getting home and just sitting in my flat on my own. And I'm just like, I miss the girls. Didn't want to speak to anyone else. And I don't think many people talk about post-tournament blues and going through that, because that is hard.
That is so funny, because that was actually one of my questions I had written down, because I know exactly how that feels. And I don't think it's something that people talk about, because you're in amongst each other, you're doing everything with each other, you're training, you're thriving, you're doing good. And then you get home and you just sit on your couch and you think, what do I do next? So what did you do next?
Because it's so abrupt. Like, literally, we went out of the competition and then the flights are coming through that same night. And I just remember, like, being on a flight and I'm like, I've got to get a food shop on. Like, as soon as I get back, I've got no food at home. Like, and I get home, I went to my parents straight away and they welcomed me back. But all they wanted to do was talk about football. But then I didn't want to speak about it. And I didn't want to seem rude or, you know, come across really being mean or anything. But I was just like, sorry, guys, I don't want to speak about it at the moment. I just wanted to sit in silence. Went back to my flat and I live on my own. So I went back to my flat and I literally sat there, didn't even put the TV on, and I just sat there. And then I ended up phoning the girls that I'd just been with for the last month or 6 weeks or however long I was with them for, because they felt like a family. And it's really hard to get over it. And then, you know, I had to speak to like a psychologist, because then I had kind of almost like an anxiety about going back into training after that. Because I wanted to go back in early just to make sure that I was prepped, ready for pre-season and the season ahead. But I had to speak to a psychologist and just find ways of coping with going back into that environment and everyone being happy to see me and wanting to talk about it, and how I could compartmentalize what I was going to say to them, because I didn't want to speak to them. So I remember going back first and being like, I don't want to see anyone. I'm just going to go into the physio and just get treatment. And that was it.
Yeah, I mean, it is something that's really underrated. And my last question to you, Bex, is club football, Tottenham, you come up against Arsenal at the Emirates next weekend. You beat them back in December. How was the girls? How's the vibe around the group? And are they still thinking about that game and taking confidence from that game in December when you beat them?
Yeah, obviously that was our most recent kind of real positive performance that we had actually had. Obviously we've had a dip in form recently and, you know, there's, you know, down to quite a lot of things. But I think that's something that we can always look back on and go, look, that was a big performance. And we had never beaten Arsenal up until that point. So it kind of showed where we was at and showed kind of the mentality of the club. The new manager that's also come in has, you know, set his standards, and, you know, it's just up to us to fulfil it. So, you know, we're all looking forward to it. And obviously the international break does cause havoc at this point of the season, because, you know, everyone's away. They don't get back until probably Thursday. Then you've got Friday, Saturday to prepare for a game on Sunday. So it's always difficult, but I know that everyone has to go through it.
For the first time this year, the Lionesses were back in action with a friendly against Austria. I was alongside Joe Shannon for commentary duties on TalkSport 2. So Becky and I look back on what was a very comprehensive win for Serena Wiegmann's side.
Is off and running for the Lionesses. Mead, the angle tight, goes for goal. Spilled by Sinsberger, and the rebound is tucked in. And England lead inside 3 minutes. It's a simple finish for the number nine, Alessia Russo. Header from Clinton is in. What a moment for Grace Clinton. An England debut goal.
Scoring on your England debut doesn't get much better than that.
And Austria have got themselves a goal. And Hannah Hampton had absolutely no chance. It was Virginia Kirschberger. Mead with a left-footed shot, finds the top corner. Hoisted into the penalty area, Wubenmoy climbing, flicked in by Carter. Carter all alone at the far post.
Jess Carter, I mean, take a bow. She almost looks embarrassed to celebrate, but it was a fantastic strike. Backheeled it into the back of the net.
And the header is into the back of the net. And Austria have a second, almost right at the very end. And would you believe it, it's Kirschberger again. Daly is clean through on goal here, with all the time in the world to smash it into the net. A good start to the new year for the Lionesses. With Italy to come on Tuesday, they've beaten Austria by 7-2.
So there, Bex, we heard it all. England 7, Austria 2. Now, Serena Wiegmann touched upon it in a press conference pre-game, talking about the fact that, you know, they have to put to bed the Nations League. You know, they beat Scotland 6-0 but went out due to goal difference with the Netherlands in that other game. How much do you actually think that disappointment is still carried with the team, or do you think now it's just a completely fresh start?
I think in the back of their minds, I think you do still think about it. Obviously, when you see, you know, other teams competing for what they should kind of by rights be involved in, I think it's always difficult. But, you know, with Serena there, I think it's time that they have to move on and they just need to get over it and they have to just try and find a way to prepare for the next thing.
Yeah, because I know there was a lot of talk about the fact that the players thought they were going to get a rest. So everybody had this whole agenda where all the media was saying, oh, you know, it's a good thing they didn't qualify for the Olympics. I don't think it was, because like I said on last week's show, when the US Women's National Team go and if they win the Olympics, best believe they'll be on an open bus parade around Times Square. So I felt like everybody was saying they're going to get a break. And obviously, they're not now. There's going to be qualifiers. So you're a player still playing. Talk to me about the burnout these players might be feeling at some point.
Yeah, I think with England especially, I think they've been going at it now for the last 3 years without much of a rest. So I do feel for them majorly in this period because it is a time where you'd think it'd be a perfect timing for them to have a break, but then they have to prepare for what's next, and that's the European qualifiers. So it's hard, but I think you know, we need to do better at looking at the scheduling, because I think that is where the issue lies. There's just too much in one go. March is a crazy month as well. Like you know, you have camps and then you've got so much games, and especially if you're in all cup competitions, you've then got to do all of that, and it's really really difficult. And I feel for the England players, because I feel like they're on the cusp of being burnt out and being really, really tired.
Yeah, I feel for them as well. And we'll talk about the lineup. Only two of the starting lineup were older than 25. First time in ages, we haven't seen Mary Earps, Lucy Bronze and Kira Walsh starting. Was the experiment, would you say, successful?
I think it's difficult because, you know, in Austria, it's kind of like it's quite a disappointing performance by them. But I think it's probably time that we did see some fresh faces in the team now, because it's, you know, been the same team now for a couple of years. And I think it is definitely time to start getting some new faces in, and especially the young ones coming through, because there's some great talent coming through. And so I guess the experiment worked. And I think, you know, it looked like a training game to me. It is what it is.
Yeah, Austria were really poor, but you can only beat what's in front of you. I mean, exactly. You just touched about the experiment and younger players. Grace Clinton, a teammate of yours at Tottenham Hotspur, yep. Dream debut, scoring on your debut. You're with her every single day. What is it that she offers? Are you surprised at this point that she's been, like, not only picked, but in the starting 11?
I think when I first met Grace, you know, she's only 20 years old, and she plays with a lot of maturity, and that's what I kind of like to see. She's got no fear, you know, and she's just got like a football brain, and she knows what she wants to do. She's got no fear, and that's what I like in a young player. She doesn't think about what she's doing. I think she's just such a good footballer that, you know, she can dribble, she's got a great shot on her, she can header, like she's got so many different bows to her arrow that it's just, you know, she's an incredible player.
And in these types of games, we said it before, you know, not taking anything away from the Lionesses, but Austria were really poor. I was really, really, you know, shocked. They've got players, Zadrazil, that plays for Bayern Munich and those types of players. But do you think it'll be difficult for someone like Grace Clinton to really break into that 11 when, you know, they're in the qualification, because you've got Georgia Stanway, Kira Walsh, Ella Toon or Fran Kirby in that three, it looks like. But do you think that she's got, like, the ability to maybe make a state of claim to start in these games?
I think she's on the cusp of being there. I think it comes with more games. Obviously, this is her first season in WSL completely with us. And, you know, she's proven week in, week out what kind of player she is. And I think as long as she keeps that up, that side of it up, and she keeps developing as a player and keeps maturing into that role, I don't see why, you know, in the coming games where she can't get a start here and there. I think that she kind of would deserve that, because she's really uplifted our team and she's brought us something completely different. And without her, you know, games would have been really, really difficult this season for us.
It's a shame really as well, because you've only got her on loan.
Yeah.
So now that she's come to you and obviously had a good season, I mean, I'm sure Manchester United will want her back. But so Alessia Russo, another player that I love Alessia Russo. I think she's a top girl as well. Two goals. Mm. Now, I don't know what you think about this, Bex, but I don't fully think that Serena Wiegmann has figured out who will be starting in that nine role, because against Scotland, we saw Lauren Hemp play there. Alessia Russo was on the bench. Rachel Daly just seems to be coming in, you know, getting minimal minutes. What do you make of her game on Friday night? And do you think Serena Wiegmann is fully sold on her being the number nine that's going to start going forward?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard. I feel like they've been going through this kind of thing with the number nine where we don't know. It's always in doubt. We don't know who's actually going to start there. So I think it's always up for grabs. And I think that's always hard as a player, because then you don't know whether you're coming or going. So I think with Les, I think she had a good performance the other day, and you could see she had something different in her where she just wanted to just take it. And obviously Rach Daly, you know, she's a proven striker and she scores a lot of goals. Last season especially, she was on fire. So it's really difficult, but it's good for the competition for places. And I think that's always healthy in a national team to have competition for places. There's no complacency. So you know, moving forward, I think it's only good for England that they've got so many options to play up there, because you don't know what could happen.
Yeah, I agree. And obviously you're in amongst it still. And I love Serena Wiegmann, and I always say I wish she was my manager. I wish she was there when I was on the team. And, you know, she's quite stubborn in her team selection in tournaments. But what do you hear about Serena Wiegmann from your teammates like Beth England and those types of teammates? Because people talk, don't they? So yeah. What is it that makes her so good, Serena Wiegmann?
Yeah, I mean, I've only heard real positive things about her. And I think maybe it's the way that she communicates with players and the relationship she kind of builds with each individual. And I think that goes a long way for us as players. I feel like, you know, when you're in a generic kind of pool of players, managers can sometimes just treat us all the same, even though we've got different traits, different personalities, different needs. And I feel like a manager that pays attention to detail for each player is something that, you know, can only bode well for every single player that plays under her.
Yeah, and I think that's something that's underestimated in the women's game, that all you want is open and honest communication. And I think there's a lot of coaches that I've played for that just don't tell you the reality. Like, I'll work harder if you just tell me I'm not at the races yet. But I think when they start talking, saying stuff that's not the reality, I think us players see through it. So for England on Tuesday night, next challenge is Italy. It'll be a different, you know, threat to Austria, but do you think that we should see, we'll start to see more experimenting, or do you think Serena will go with the players that she knows and trusts?
I hope there's more experimenting. I'd love to see Kira Keating in goal. I think she deserves to make her debut at senior level, because she's been excellent this season, if not one of the best goalkeepers in the league this year. So I think she deserves that. She's a young goalkeeper. She's full of confidence, and I don't see why, you know, that wouldn't be a game that she could probably go into, because we've seen the same team over and over now. So I don't see why another friendly would, it's not going to harm anyone to see different players out there again. So I would love to see another experiment.
Yeah, and obviously you're a goalkeeper, I'm not, and I think goalkeepers see things differently, you know, from a defensive perspective. What is it about Kiara Keating and Hannah Hampton that has impressed you so much this season in the league? And, you know best positionally, not just shot stopping and those types of things.
I think both of them are, you know, incredible with their feet. And I think that's now obviously the modern game. So, and the teams that they play for, they have to be good with their feet. If they're not, then they probably wouldn't play. So to see someone so young, especially in Kiara, she has been excellent with her feet. She's allowed to, she's just got the license to do whatever she wants to do with her feet. And you can see the confidence breeding out of her. Making a save for us, you know, as goalkeepers is, for me, is just as good as making a great pass out to your fullback or delivering the ball well with your feet, because we do that more than we make saves. And I think people don't realise that how many touches on the ball we actually have. Sometimes it's more than outfield players. So both of them are, you know, incredible with their feet, and they've just both got incredible attributes to bring to the game.
How surprised have you been with Kiara? Because you obviously knew a little bit about her, probably more than I did coming through the ranks. But obviously first season in the first team, and she's kind of looking like she's been there for a really long time.
Yeah, I mean, it's credit to Man City, really. And I know the goalkeeping coach, Chris, there, and he's done an amazing job with the goalkeepers over the years. And I think it's credit to them for keep believing in her and giving her the opportunity to make mistakes, you know, to play well and to just develop and experience different experiences of different opposition. So now when you look at her, you can tell she looks like a seasoned pro. She looks like she's been playing for years, and she's, you know, she's so young. So she's got so many years left that, you know, so I can't wait to see what else there is from her.
Yeah, and then another player that we know really well personally as well, Frank Kirby, got injured in the warm-up. She's pulled out of the squad now. Ella Toon went in her place, and I think it was one of the best performances I've seen from Ella Toon, because I've questioned it many times, you know, in the 11, the best 11 in the world, I don't think so, but I think she's a good player. What do you make of Frank Kirby? You know, obviously been injured for a couple of years now. What do you think about her career with the Lionesses going forward? And obviously we wish her well with this injury, and hopefully it's not going to be something pretty serious.
Yeah, I just find, you know, Fran, I know Fran really well, and, you know, she's just got the character to just keep coming back, and she's just been, you know, so unfortunate with the injury she's picked up. And, you know, once you pick up big injuries, you know, there's always other little things that keep coming. And I think, you know, she's well looked after at Chelsea. They look after her. I think England is the same thing. So I think, you know, for her, she just has to be healthy. I don't see why she wouldn't ever be picked for England. I think she's, you know, she's an incredible player. And, you know, I just hope that she can just get to a point in her career now where she can just be injury free and she can just be able to just express herself for the rest of her career, because she deserves it.
Yeah, I agree, Bex. Thank you. This is the TalkSport Women's Football Show on TalkSport 2. Leanne Sanderson and Becky Spencer with you. Coming up next, we'll see what stories are in the women's football headlines.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to BOLLandBranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
The WSL might have been on the break this week, but the world of women's football never sleeps. Becky and I discussed some of the biggest stories making the headlines this week. Something, Bex, that I think is always going to take the headlines, unfortunately. Another ACL injury, Mia Fischel. It's also been announced, a positive thing, that Beth Mead and Viviana Miedema are set to work with FIFA, you know, to talk about their experiences with the ACL. Now, how does it feel now still playing in the game? And every single week, I think we're all becoming desensitized to the amount of injuries we're seeing within the women's game. Now, we're not doctors. I'm not a doctor. I've unfortunately had that injury myself. How are the players feeling about the amount of injuries? And is there a lot of fear in a lot of players now? Because every single week we're seeing another ACL, another ACL, another ACL.
Yeah.
So how does it feel being in amongst it still?
I think it's more like spoken about now in changing rooms, whereas before that never used to really be a thing. But the more it keeps happening, the more people are starting to think about it. And you know what they say, you think about it, then you kind of bring it onto the pitch and you're thinking about it out there. So I think it's really hard to kind of find a balance of to, you know, go out on training and feeling really, really confident, because you just don't know. At any point, it could be your time to do it, because I feel like it's just so common and so many people are doing it. I think it was maybe 6 in the last 10 days that I've seen like a whole list of. And it happens and it's just like, but how and why? Like, why is it happening and how? And I think these are the answers that we kind of start, we need it now.
Yeah, and I think the thing that frustrates me is I think if it was in the men's game, you know, I think there'd be more emphasis, and I constantly hear people talk about research, but what does that look like?
Yeah.
And I think we said it off air before, Bex, that we always believe in what the exercise scientists are saying, what they're telling us to do. But me personally, I think we went 0 to 100 too quickly without any type of support. And, you know, Maya spoke to you about this before we went on there, and I want to touch upon this a little bit about the support that the players have got injury-wise. And because there's obviously a lot of talk about how great the women's game is doing, but players went from training twice a week, like we did, to training every single day.
Yeah.
And there's not really much support in kind of mentally and the physicality of doing that.
The transition is difficult because, like you said, you go from twice a week and you're working to then full-time athletes. So then it's a real, there's no balance to it, because you're just going, like you said, from 0 to 100. And I feel like as the game is progressing and we're going more and more into the, you know, the women's game is getting bigger, there's more, we're doing more for it, if that makes sense. So, you know, we was at Arsenal where we had the most successful years of our careers, training twice a week. I mean, Fleets never used to train. She used to fly in on a Sunday and play the game and then go home. She never
that is
used
a true story. Judy Fleeting used to fly in for every one of our games and play, score about 5 goals and then get back on that plane to Scotland, and off she went.
Yeah, because she was a teacher, right? So it's very limited of what people were actually doing. I don't remember ever really going into the gym or doing any kind of strength exercises, anything like that. It was just the bare basics. We'd just go out, do a little warm-up and we would train. And then now there is so much that we do. Like, you know, before training, you've got maybe like a 45-minute pre-act or, you know, something else that you have to do beforehand. Then you go out and train, then you come back in and then you're in the gym again. And that never used to be the case. So I feel like the transition has definitely been difficult, because you didn't know about it. You didn't know that that was the right thing. So like you said, we just got to trust what people are putting in front of us. And there's obviously more research and more data being, you know, produced by everyone. So then you just trust what, you know, what we're doing. And it's what we get paid for. It's our job.
Yeah. And I think with the research, I think we'll start to see the benefits in years to come. Mm. Unfortunately, now it's literally like a pandemic of ACL injuries and meniscus injuries. And then we almost will see in the next 5 to 10 years, maybe this research will come into fruition. Mm. So Bex, we're in 2024 and it's still crazy to say we're seeing minimal, specifically female football boots being made. How crazy is that?
I mean, I actually think it's terrible. I've spoken about this before because I think, you know, our foot sizes and, you know, the width of our feet, everything about our feet are different to men's. And I'm like, it's like now they changed the kit. So we wear women's fit kit. But then the most important thing is what we're wearing on our feet because we're on it all the time. We have to kick with it. We have to twist. We have to turn. We're running. And I'm just like, but why is no one taking notice and why is no one taking care of that? Because a lot of feet injuries, you know, come because your feet, you know, your boots are not fitting you, they're too loose, or, you know, just little things like that. And I don't think we're really taking that seriously, if I'm going to be totally honest.
Yeah, and I think I remember there was a time about 15 years ago when Mia Hamm came out of a pair, and I remember we all had them at Arsenal. They gave us them. Yeah, they gave us those boots, and I thought they were brilliant. And I think it's like a tradesman, isn't it? Yeah. Not having the right tools.
Yeah.
When you're playing, that's probably the most. Probably the most important part of your foot. I mean, when we had kits back in the day, it was almost like the equivalent of carrying someone on your back, wasn't it? We used to have the hand-me-down kits. And people think I played in the 1960s. I mean, I only retired 4 years ago. So it wasn't even that long ago we were having these hand-me-down kits. And to be fair, like, when we were at Arsenal, I was thinking, oh, this is one of the men's kits. Like, loved it. Do you know what I mean? So, but it's the reality. And I think that's why it's important to get different opinions like yourself that have played at the highest level, have played for so many different teams, because I think there's this element where people kind of get carried away with the here and now and not really think about what's come before. So,
because, you know, don't get me wrong, ACLs were happening years ago, like years and years ago. I think my sister even done her ACL, and that was like in the 90s. And I'm like, so it was happening. It's always been happening, but it's just been a slow progression of more and more. So it's definitely, there's something there that needs to be done. Like, there has to be something there. I don't know why or why it hasn't happened yet, because it's been years worth of it. It's not just happened overnight.
Definitely, for sure. Now, I want to bring our attention back to the Nations League. Spain qualified for the Olympics after defeating the Netherlands in the semi-final. France automatically qualify as hosts, but they beat Germany in their semi-final. Third place playoff decides the other qualifier on Wednesday. Spain, you know, the Euros, Olympics, everything. Is it hard to see past them, really? And what do you make of their progression? Because obviously in the Euros, when England won it, Spain didn't look great.
Yeah.
And obviously they've had all that adversity off the field of play, different coaches and all that stuff with Luis Rubiales. But is it hard to see past them quality-wise?
No, I think, they're the best team in the world. And it speaks facts. Even without, you know, without the big players that they also had, they still managed to win the World Cup. So you look at them and the style of play, the way they do it, they never change for anyone. And I think that's something that is so refreshing in, you know, in a team. They just play the way they play. Doesn't matter who they come up against, they'll just continue just to do that. And quality-wise, technical ability, everything, I think they're just head and shoulders above everyone.
Yeah, and I think they beat us in the final and deservedly so. Mm-hmm. Another teams I want to bring attention to, Netherlands face Germany in the third place playoff on Wednesday to decide the final Olympic space. Who do you fancy for that one?
I'm going to go for the Netherlands. Yeah, I'm going to go for the Netherlands in this one.
A little bit of reason why? Because Germany have been a force for years, and I think people underestimate them still now because they think, oh, you know, they're not like they used to be, because they used to dominate every single team.
Yeah, and I think it's almost like a little bit of a transitional period for them, but I think they had quite a disappointing World Cup as well. So maybe, you know, this will be fire in their bellies to make it to the Olympics, but I want to go for the Netherlands. I think I've enjoyed watching Netherlands over the years, and they've also been there or whereabouts where, you know, they've always been on the cusp of winning things, won stuff, and you just think, yeah, maybe I'm going to go for the Netherlands.
Okay, we'll see next week. I'll get you back in and we'll have a talk about that. And now, obviously, there's a lot of positives around the women's game at the moment, but the reduction in the budget in Switzerland for 2025, I mean, more than 70% reduction despite the initial promised amount of money. Now, you can speak from experience playing for Jamaica and knowing all that. Do we take for granted, since the Euros, obviously the Lionesses are flying, but there's so many countries that are not financially stable, not being backed. So do we take that for granted a little bit, Bex?
I think so. I think unless you're in it, you don't know. Unless people speak about it, you also don't know. And I think we just have to be brave enough now just to get it all out there. And that's something that us as a nation, as Jamaica, we have tried to do that, but it's almost fallen on deaf ears. So it's really, really difficult because there's other, there's so many other nations that are struggling and that, you know, in worse situations than Jamaica are. And I don't think we take it seriously because, like I said, if you're not in it and if you're not a part of that nation, you don't feel it.
So how do you convince a nation to kind of invest within a team? Like, what does that even look like?
I mean, for us, we were just fighting for basics, just basic things of communication, timings, you know, just stuff like that, just conditions. And that's just something that we need to start off at, just to feel more professional. I think what's happened is, over the years, these nations have had players that have never been professional before. But then as time's gone on, more professional players are starting to play for these nations now. So we know what it looks like at a club level. So then when we come in to play for your country, then you don't have an expectation for it to be the same, but you have the bare minimum. So when you're not getting the bare minimum, that's when there's a problem.
Yeah, and I think, you know, you touched upon it before when you and Bunny Shaw were travelling to the World Cup from different locations without your teammates, travelling in the economy. It's not good enough, Bex. And hopefully bringing attention to it, like shows like this and other people, will hopefully make things better for everybody. The WSL, the Championship and the World HQ have announced three new projects to support their clubs across various areas of female athlete health. I sat down and spoke to Dr. Emma Ross of Well HQ and Andy Hudson from the FA to dig a little bit deeper.
I founded the Well HQ with two other amazing women's health specialists about 3 years ago. And our mission is to address inequalities for women and girls in sport. And we do that through working with national governing bodies, consulting with them, helping them gain insight, and also then helping them educate the workforce. And that's really what the relationship with the FA has looked like. And since 2021, we've been working in this space with them. One of the brilliant things about this project is it started off by going back to the players and the coaches and the practitioners who are working and playing in the game and saying, what's coming up for you? And so we started off with that insight work in 2021, reported that insight work back to them in 2022, and then obviously, we're going to be talking about what we're rolling out now in response to that, which is super, super exciting.
So, Emma, touching on a few of the findings, it's been a topic of conversation the last few years. And I know a lot of clubs have worked on this, you know, menstrual cycle, period, hormonal contraception. How will these types of workshops be delivered and what does that look like?
Yeah, so all of those topics came up from the insight work, as well as kit and sports bras, and nutrition and fueling well as girls and women. And so what we did is we collected those sort of hot topics, if you like, where there was a need and an appetite to know more, better awareness, better knowledge. And then we developed CPD training for practitioners and coaches across the Women's Super League and Women's Championship. That's delivered online. It's called Football Her. And essentially it's the first of its kind because it's the first sport-specific training and development, which really looks holistically at female bodies. So not just reducing women down to having periods or menstrual cycles, but saying these are the whole host of topics that we need to be aware of when we're looking at this football player in front of us as a female, as well as a football player. And so we developed educational content, wrapped it up as a Football Her CPD course, which is being delivered across, as I say, Women's Super League and Women's Championship, so that the whole knowledge base is raised. And then the clubs can, for example, some of the clubs have already started rolling out player education, so they're passing on that knowledge. And so we get this lovely ripple effect across the game.
Was there any findings from the report that surprised you?
To be honest, Leanne, I don't think anything was surprising because we find consistently the same topics coming up. So the same things like the fact that menstrual cycle, so many girls and women don't know enough about their menstrual cycle in the context of sport, and they find that the menstrual cycle is holding them back. And we found the same thing in football, and that's why we really wanted to give the sports science practitioners and the coaches the confidence to have conversations about that in the very first instance, because that's the biggest barrier, isn't it? Not even knowing if your player is suffering. And then also some tools about what to do, how we track cycles, how we manage symptoms. And so we weren't really surprised by any of the findings. All of the topics that we expected to come up came up. But brilliantly with this project, we were able to act very quickly on trying to fill that need and fill that gap in terms of knowledge and support.
And equality and diversity is something that's been a talking point in women's game for a really long time. What difference do you think that World HQ will make and the collaboration with the FA that you guys now have?
I mean, football is an enormous vehicle for us to be talking about women's health. So in that respect, it's absolutely fantastic, because I think if football get this right, if the women's game get this right, which they are absolutely doing, it's a real showcase that we need to look at people doing sport as female as well and consider these important elements of women's health to enable them to either participate and enjoy sport more or to perform to the best of their ability. So this collaboration is really moving to that equality when it comes to everyone in football being able to realise their full potential. And equality means having the same. And for some things in football, we're absolutely driving for the same. You know, we want women's players to be paid equally. But actually, when it comes to sort of science and medicine and supporting the female player, we're talking more about equity. So we're talking more about, as a male or a female athlete, you need something different to be able to be the best footballer you can be. And that's what we're doing with this project, is saying there are some things which every footballer needs to do really well, and then when we're coaching and supporting women's players, there are other things we need to consider for her to be able to go as far as she wants to go.
And something else has been a big talking point in recent years. I mean, when I played, a number of my teammates did have babies, did have children around the England camp, which we all loved, Katie Chapman, but it was more predominant in America. Now, pregnancy within the women's game is still quite uncommon. What do you think World HQ can do to support that? And also, I think we're seeing more players now that are not waiting until they retire, but it's been a real big topic in recent years at the lack of support. So where does World HQ come into that and the involvement?
So what we've been able to do with the FA is be able to provide sort of expertise to help shape guidance when it comes to supporting footballers who want to get pregnant, who are pregnant, and who are returning to the game postnatally. And essentially, we just want everyone to be better informed, because in sport more generally, the exact same thing has happened, Leanne, that athletes have waited to retire. And so we haven't had to support them as pregnant and postnatal athletes. And now across sport, that is changing. But there was a gap, there was a lag in terms of everyone feeling really well informed, players and their support staff. So this project has identified some key areas, one of them being pregnancy and postnatal support of the player, to say, what extra guidance can we give to the practitioners who are supporting the women in the clubs, so that everyone feels sort of informed and confident that that's an absolute possibility if a player chooses to do that.
Amazing. Thank you. I'm just going to come to you, Andy, now. So what has the FA's role been in all of this? I think it sounds super exciting, being a former player myself, seeing all the stuff people talk about research. And what does that really look like? But what's the FA's involvement been with all of this?
Well, we very much looked at this through the pro game lens, and it is and will continue to be a really high priority for us as we roll into the new co. Fundamentally, we've made the investment. That's the first part. Worked very closely with the Well to guide the content and also to ensure that the development of female athlete health has become a really key aim within the clubs and across the leagues. And we've got a few levers for that, but in part that's also through our license and governance structures. So I understand that we are the first league in the world to mandate this as part of the club staff training, not only in terms of the broader education, but specifically the female health lead element to things.
So Andy, as well, Emma touched upon it before, some players will be part of these workshops and kind of filtering through. But what does that look like? Will we start to see players being given this information and then, you know, filtering it through the younger age group, like the younger lionesses and those types of things, and on a broader aspect?
Yeah, so we've taken a view that we wanted to work closely in collaboration with club staff primarily, or in the first instance. So we haven't aimed to circumvent the club staff and provide information directly to players at this stage, although that does happen through England and England Pathways to the players that are in their care. But we're very much about focusing on working and collaborating with club staff to raise their level of education and understanding and support in support of them as they help develop players as footballers and as people.
So my last question is to both of you, but I'll come to you first, Andy. So I'm super excited for this. As I mentioned before, I think it's brilliant. You know, as a former player, you want to start to see things taking place. What are the next steps and when is this going to be rolling out and this exciting prospect?
Well, the Football Her course, which was education for all staff within the club, got underway in October. So we rolled that out at the start of the season. We will be initiating the Female Athlete Health Leads course at the end of March this year. So that is, Emma can speak a bit more to the detail of that. And then as we go into the off season, we'll have a series of those guidance documents come out in support of clubs so they can help to improve and develop their systems and processes ahead of next season.
And you, Emma?
Yeah, so I think one of the things that we highlighted to the FA very early on is if you're going to do this properly, there has to be a sort of strategic, systematic approach and accountability and leadership. So you can't just train everyone up and then expect everyone to do better. You have to have someone in each club saying, what are we doing in this club in the context of our resources and our people and our players? And so the next stage of the rollout is the Female Athlete Health Leaders course, which Andy's mentioned, which is taking one person from each club. And they're not going to be the person that's, you know, has to know everything and do everything, but they're going to be the person leading the strategy. And they can work with the nutritionist or the psychologist or the strength and conditioning coach or the goalkeeping coach and say, in the scope of your role, how are we integrating female athlete health and really considering it and supporting it well? So for me, that's absolutely the most exciting part because that gives this whole thing longevity. It means that this female athlete health will become a golden thread throughout the pro game that just gets acknowledged and supported as a matter of course in football. And that will be kind of the flagship, I guess, for other sports to look in and say, this is how we do it really well.
Amazing. Well, thank you to Andy and Emma for joining me today. I'm really excited about this prospect and I look forward to seeing more in the future.
Thanks, Leanne.
Now, Bex, how important is this type of project for the health and the support of the female footballers? Because obviously, for years, we've spoken about the fact that there's not much support, maternity, menstrual cycle, that type of stuff. So how important are these types of initiatives?
I mean, they're really important. And, you know, it's a shame that it's taken this long for it to actually happen. You know, we hear a lot about all this stuff. We hear a lot about, you know, menstrual cycles and, you know, how clubs are getting different, you know, people in to speak about it. You know, we have wellness forms and everything like that. But I think having support outside as well is massive for players because we all need to understand what's going on. Certain injuries can happen when you're on your period or, you know, just certain things like that. And maternity leave, you know, people need to feel comfortable that they can, you know, come back to a football career afterwards. And I think it's important for us to have a peace of mind as well as we play.
Yeah, I don't know if you've noticed this, but I've noticed a lot of my teammates, like former teammates, were having to retire to have, you know, kids. Have you noticed now that there is a little bit more support, still needs to be better,
yeah,
but people are able to kind of have a baby and still be involved, still get paid and those types of things?
Yeah, you know, I think Tony was the last person that I saw had a baby.
Tony Duggan, yeah.
Yeah, Tony Duggan, she's still managing to play now and you know, I think it's credit to her, obviously coming back after, you know, giving birth, I think is an amazing thing for any female. But just seeing that just shows you that I think other people now will follow suit and when they feel ready, they can feel comfortable in doing that and knowing that they still will have a job to come back to afterwards.
And that's all for this week. Thanks so much for listening. Don't forget, I'll bring you the commentary for the Lionesses friendly against Italy on Tuesday night on TalkSport 2 from 5 p.m. We'll be back next Monday when we will review a huge weekend of WSL action, including a North London derby at the Emirates.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight. and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.